What's the right manner to pronounce Weltwoche?
I hate to say you are absolutely right. Weltwoche.
Weltwoche. Okay.
I tried to start on a charming note here.
Yeah, that's the smart way, you know, dealing with devil.
No, it's
very good morning to you. Have you been already punished, crucifixed, and almost murdered by those who are telling you nowadays you are Putin Versteher, and there's no way you can deal with the German-speaking public with all your ugly Russian friends?
I mean, you should know by now that if you're raising the voice, I see this program as a kind of comedy, which of course is not at all appropriate for the earnestness of topics we have to discuss. But I have to disappoint you. Even though you are praying every day that they will lock me up, that they will arrest me in the morning, that some kind of clandestine troops, you know, by the European Commission, by Ursula von der Leyen, they will
hide. Not yet.
They will take me. I have not to say, yet. Not yet. But well,
no. But what I'm trying
dies.
To prove,
hope never dies.
What I was trying to prove, the point that actually we played a bit. You see, when I'm raising voice and using some theatrics, immediately there's enormous amount of little videos in TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, whatever. If we're talking just sense, calmly, reasonably, amount of viewers definitely low. That proves, unfortunately, my point that emotional vehicle is important in order to get something to the brain of modern listeners and viewers. Unfortunately.
Absolutely. No, and you're right here. I mean, provocation is important, but as we all know, the provocation is only as good as the quality
of
the thoughts behind it.
Right. That's very true. So where are we? What are the main questions of this week? Are we closer to peace? Are we closer to war? Are we getting anywhere where can we say that reason is finally came to this world?
I think we are closer to peace. And even though my friends also here in Switzerland say I'm the eternal hopeless optimist, I'm always referring to a book you might, of course, and you know very well, which is War and Peace by Tolstoy. And I read it rather late in my life. And I was very impressed by the last chapter or the last book where he reflects upon the laws of history. And he says, we should never overestimate the leaders. We should never think that Napoleon and all, how these guys are called, that they are riding the tiger. But the tiger, which means all the people on this planet, they are actually, you know, shaping the direction. And I just have the feeling and the conviction that, you know, in our world, we are doomed to cooperate. Of course, there are big tensions, big conflicts, but at the end of the day, the people in Russia, I mean, you are also fed up with wars. You had enough of them. You had enough catastrophes in the second, in the 20th century. The Chinese, they don't want war. The Europeans, they are somehow lost in their disorientation. You have to understand. The Americans, of course, they're a bit overly idealistic, but, you know, we need them too. So I think the overall vectors are heading towards peace. And I see, my last remark, when I was in Russia recently, I got a lot of very gloomy outlooks. And I was a bit scared because the signs were all on escalation. And then I come back to Europe, and what do I see? I see that, you know, the necessity of diplomacy was returning, and they were trying to find an interlocutor. Your president was saying, well, send Schröder or someone else. I dare to say these are optimistic signs.
Wow, man, you are an optimist. Well, okay, let's get back to basics. First of all, the Babylon Tower. That's it. We've What's been that? divided. The Tower of Babylon. The Tower of Babylon has been destroyed. And all the people of this world were sent to peace. We have zero chances to be united. Zero chances, unfortunately. And that's why when they're saying that, come on, everyone is willing to... No. And people are not sick and tired of war. And they're not sick and tired of peace. It's like tide. In the world history, it's not something that you can actually influence. It's just there. Unfortunately, there's no other way that the world has created for solving all the contradictions in economy, in politics, but wars. There can be different forms of those wars. They can be bloody, they can be economic, they can be ideological. But unfortunately, Cain killed Abel. It's extremely sad, but we're doomed by our nature to fight wars all the time. Either those wars inside our soul, inside our brain, or in the outside world. When you're talking that diplomacy, what diplomacy? Look at this G7. An enormous amount of ass-licking assholes, and only one actually person with brains, with charisma, with power, and that's Donald Trump, who, look at the way he looks at all those guys. They're nothing. They're a bunch of ass-licking idiots.
I mean,
those six. Well, yes, there are serious people, like, you know, representative of India. Yeah, there are decent people, Saudi Arabia. But look at those guys, so-called Europeans and Stammer. Who are they? Whom do they represent? They have zero right to speak, to raise the voice saying that, yeah, you know, we've been elected by... We've discussed it many times. The level of popularity in their own countries is nothing. And they dare to say, hey, you, Russia, you should do this, you should do that. And by the way, we're going to fight you. Look, military-industrial complex of Europe nowadays is working for Ukraine. Who's paying Ukraine military? Europe. Who's ruling? Who is governing Ukraine? Zelensky? Come on, definitely not. But all those motherfuckers, all six of them, besides Trump, Trump is in another league, they're all on Zelensky payroll, may I say. And he cannot pay with his own money. He pays with money. He bribes them with money that he has stolen and keeps stealing from the American and European taxpayers. And no one ever tried to even to check whatever happened with money. No one ever. Isn't it weird, especially for German-speaking people, an accountable amount of money being given with any form of reporting, any form of checking, any form of control? That sounds extremely suspicious.
You remind me of an encounter I had 22 years ago, 22 years ago in Washington, D.C. I was sitting at a table with some of the leading neocons of the United States of America. Bob Kagan, you know them all, you've read their books, etc. And it was at the time when the United States had difficulty in their war against Iraq. And it was interesting how they spoke about the European Union. It's more or less the same, even with the with those expressions I'm not using, because it doesn't lead to anything if you start to just insult people, especially in a time where there is a real chance of escalation. Where does it lead to if you start to insult everybody? But they did it too. And you know very well, I'm a Swiss patriot, defender of neutrality and of our independence. And I'm also a critic of the European Union. But when I listen to you, I have the same feeling that back then in Washington, you force me to defend, which cannot be defended, the European Union. I have to be the duty lawyer of these guys.
You have to defend the European Union, but you have to defend people of European Union.
You know, you are the master communicator in Russian television. You have millions of viewers, and you have a great responsibility. And I think these are just two cheap targets to take these European leaders. Of course, we can agree easily that they make big mistakes.
Yeah, of course, I agree. But get me other targets. Don't, you know, you put those cheap targets right in front of me.
You know what?
So
you
get
know
me
what,
someone worth discussing. Okay, just elect them.
And what about yourself?
No,
what about yourself? Where is your self-criticism, Vladimir?
Well, I'm
Take yourself as a target.
Unfortunately,
not only these easy guys, you know.
Right. Unfortunately, and that's a big problem that you cannot. I should probably send you with the translation. Some of my programs, even today, the first hour of my program, I was really heavily criticizing what's happening in Russia.
No,
what we do and how we do. And I raise hell for a whole bunch of Russian money sacks, you know, all those Russian oligarchs that are trying to behave as if there is no war and that they're doing absolutely things that are unacceptable during the war. Sure. And I'm always extremely, let me put it this way, if you think that I'm raising hell toward those cheap targets, you should listen to me talking about domestic problems.
And I think it's important to bring these points up, especially probably in another language, I would suggest. But of course, in Europe, in our media, these guys are under-criticized and the Russian side is over-criticized.
That's not me who started this language. That's very important point. Read British newspapers. Listen to European political leaders. Words that they're using to describe our president, our soldiers, our people, and even Russian culture.
But don't let yourself be provoked by people you don't deem your equal. Why do you repeat the mistakes of the other guys?
We discussed it during our first conversation. That's the only way to make you hear, not you personally. That's the only way, unfortunately, only...
Okay.
That's the big problem.
Yeah, sure.
That's the biggest problem. This world reacts only on provocation. That's and ugly, thanks, but that's the way it is.
No, that's true. And thanks to me, Europe is now listening and countering your preconceptions about Europe. You got a huge number of fans in Europe, which means that not everybody hates you. Not everybody hates the Russians. And I just say, even though
in
you're
In my
right,
case, not everybody hates Russians and not everybody hates Jews because I happen to be both and Jew and Russian. I'm not Israeli. I'm Russian, but I'm Jew. Because sometimes in Russia, it's important to make this difference. Because sometimes people in Russia have a tendency to think that all Jews are Israelis and all Israelis are Jews. Mm. That's not the case, as you know.
And it's very interesting that you're bringing it up because it reminds me of another a great scene in a movie, which is the movie Bananas by Woody Allen, where he tells a joke at the beginning of the UN General Assembly. And he tells this joke to break the ice, Woody Allen. He says, he's in New York, he runs into a subway, and he sees in a compartment, he sees a black guy reading a Jewish newspaper. And the American guy says, well, Jew alone is not enough.
Exactly. And,
which shows what you just explained.
Isn't it enough?
Let me say a very important point.
Sure.
Your description, of course, is right. We're doomed to conflict, to be engulfed by our own catastrophes, man-made. But at the end of the day, isn't it the miracle that humanity has survived? And this is, for me, a proof of God, because if you would leave human beings on their own, they would have killed themselves long ago. So I see the positive. I always see the silver lining. And I think one should overcome this rhetoric of total confrontation. This is propaganda rhetoric. I mean, they do it on our side, you do
Once again,
it as
why
well.
are you using this word propaganda? You see,
Because,
what every time when I'm trying to be reasonable, I'm asking very easy question. How come that in Western press, Russia is portrayed as weak, whose army cannot overcome Ukrainian army, and that we've been freezed on the front line like at the First World War, and we have enormous losses of human power, and our economy is almost ruined, and at the same time, that we'll definitely in a couple of months have to conquer all Europe and destroy the whole Europe, and we'll start fighting NATO, and NATO in such a weak situation? In the same hand of the same people. It's either or. What's any reasonable explanation for Russia to start war with NATO? Is there anyone who can give me even one easy answer, or complicated, but at least answer? When every single day you want us to be friendly, but when suddenly the guy who runs Luftwaffe is stating that even this night he's ready to bombard Kaliningrad, Black Sea, Baltic Sea. Are you nuts? No, the guy who is running Luftwaffe, the Goering of modern times, is saying to Russians that we're ready to start bombarding your cities. What kind of reaction he's expecting from us? You'll give me an answer immediately after the break. Roger Coppel is with us, brave Swiss patriot. So, where are we? So, what's the answer?
The answer to your points you made first, and on this, I'm sure we can agree on the Ukraine war. This is the premise. The Ukraine war is probably, I say probably, primarily the mistake of the West. You get almost crucified in public if you say that, but I'm afraid to say this point has to be made. There were huge mistakes made after the collapse of the Soviet Union, which all led to this war. And now we're in a situation where the people in Europe and, until the Biden administration, they were not willing to accept this. They were like trying to find this bogeyman and say, no, only the Russians are to blame. These are the evil guys, etc. And I mean, that's propaganda. If you are in war, that's the game of propaganda. You have it on the Russian side as well. When I listen to former President Medvedev, when I listen to you sometimes, you're just overdoing it and you're kind of focusing too much on that. But that's the law of propaganda. And they, of course, now are all trapped. They're prisoners of their own narratives. And of course, in that sense, they start to demonize as much as they can Russia in order to justify, of course, their political direction in a situation where millions of people in Europe start to disagree. So you have to take into account that these leaders you're always shooting at in Europe, they're under extreme pressure. And there you have to have a certain understanding. Now, why I am still optimistic and I disagree with your very gloomy outlook. What we see now, but I'm curious, what is your take? I think what we're seeing now is an interesting development on the battlefield. We see big powers like the United States in Iran, and we see Russia in Ukraine, and their war machines do not succeed in a way as their leaders want them to succeed. And your program is proof of it, because you told me that you are criticizing the Kremlin every day. You're criticizing your president because he's doing not enough to win the situation. So we are, we see now it's similar as in the Middle Ages, when the drones of the Middle Ages came up, the longbows by the English against the French armored knights. You know, these riding tanks of the Middle Ages were stopped by the longbows, by the drones, and they couldn't somehow find a solution. And this war tiredness, which I think, but probably I'm wrong, which I see is growing also in Russia, this forces everybody to the negotiating table. But what I think is very important in this diplomatic rapprochement is that on the Western side, and I think President Trump sees it exactly, even though he's an American, he's an inescapable American, he cannot get out of his skin. But President of the United States, I think he understands the security concerns of Russia. I think he understands very clearly the absurdity of what happened after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And this also leads, on my side, to a certain, you could say, cautious optimism.
Well, I don't want to be rude. And I'll just
please be rude. Please be rude.
I'll just make a few points in order to be on the same page. First of all, unfortunately, the war with Ukraine is something that is, I hate to say this, but that's the part of the aftershock of the collapsing empire. Every time when we face the collapse of the great world empires, we had this type of wars. After the collapse of the Roman Empire, after the collapse of United Kingdom of Great Britain Empire, that happens all the time. So that's why, in order to prevent this kind of events, it takes a lot of effort. And of course, we did whatever we could in order to prevent this type of war. Because with Ukrainians, we are the same people, we have the same religion. And West did whatever they could to push Ukraine toward this war by changing the code of nation, rewriting its history, fighting the Pravoslavia, the Orthodox Church, trying to do whatever they can to separate. Because at this time, the doctrine that has been announced by this American guy of Polish origin who hated Russia like guts, and Brzezinski, he stated that without Ukraine, Russia will never be an empire. By the way, it's a completely wrong statement, but that was the main way of thinking of American political system. So they invested $5 billion, as been once mentioned by Victoria Nuland, in order to create this tension between Ukraine and Russia. And that's a tragedy. That's obvious.
I agree.
Longbows of modern world... That's not the case. Drone is just one of the methods of this war. They are not important. What is much more important, that we're getting back to the times when the war is not between countries. But let's say we're not fighting Ukraine, and we're not fighting United States as such, because United States have never declared war against us. But we're fighting Palantir. We're fighting Carp, we're fighting Musk, that they declared that they're fighting against us. And they made this statement many times. We're fighting this guy from Google who makes Hornet drone. We're fighting German companies that are saying that, oh, we are with Ukraine, we will work on the rocket system. We're fighting Scandinavian companies that said, oh, we'll be manufacturing stuff that will gonna kill Russians. And their countries are not saying that, oh, we are in the war with Russia. But their companies are stating that, yes, we are fighting Russia. So whom should we attack? Whom should we be dealing to? The difference between American, Israel, Ukrainian from one side and Iran from the other side war, and war on the territory of Ukraine against NATO that we're fighting is enormous. Trump did whatever he could except boots on the ground and nuclear weapon. But why he was fighting this war? For whom? For Israelis? For Americans? For the oil price? What's the reason for this war? For not allowing Iran to have their own nuclear program? But they have all the right in the world to have their own peace nuclear program. And they had this religious statement from Ayatollah stating that they will never, ever have the nuclear weapon. So what's the reason to fight? Religious country that stated that in our beliefs we cannot have nuclear weapon. In our case, we're not willing to fight Ukraine. We never wanted to fight Ukraine. We just wanted to stop genocide, humiliation, and death of Russian people on the former territories of the Soviet Union that once stated that we do not accept military coup in Kyiv of 2014. And for 8 years, they fought almost on their own against Ukraine Nazis. I know that you don't like this word, so let's put it politely, of the followers of Nazi ideas, ultra-right Nazi movement that still uses symbols of Nazi Germany. We were never saying that we want to conquer Ukraine. Look at the Istanbul Treaty. In Istanbul Treaty, it was obvious that we are not willing to take Ukraine at all. We were discussing only two territories that we recognized as sovereign governments, as sovereign countries. That was it. Who managed to change it? Boris Johnson, French guys, and Israelis, as was stated by President Lukashenko. Vatican and Israelis. We've been never defeated on the outskirts of Kyiv. We withdraw our troops because Macron told us, yes, they agree, but please, they cannot sign peace agreement with the gun by the head. So can you please withdraw your troops? And we did it. I'm criticizing Putin because I'm much more rough in my attitude. I'm much more harsh in my attitude. I'm saying that if it's the war with NATO, let's fight it. But Putin, he is much more democratic than I am. And he is definitely, you know, let me go this way. He loves people much more than I do. He doesn't want war. Through all his, you know, through the all years of his career, he's a real Russian patriot. But he's the person that always is trying to make peace. That's why the way we're fighting Ukrainians, we discuss it. That's the only war in the history of this world when the ratio of casualties is such that we cannot, there's no one to compare with, no war to compare with, nothing to compare with. Amount of soldiers that have been killed is times higher than the amount of killed civilians, as Americans will call it, collateral damage. We do not call them collateral damage. We feel sorry for every single human that has been killed. Of course, when we're not talking about Nazis. But civilians, it's always a tragedy. Always a tragedy. And when we see reports coming from the West with yet another journalist from CNN saying, oh, see, that's how at night, and, you know, Ukrainians, and there's the guy, you know, with his Nazi symbol since the Second World War, and they're shooting the rockets toward Russia. And that's the same crew that killed girls at Starobielsk. And when we are telling CNN, please send your reporters to Starobielsk so you can witness by your own eyes, the response is, no, I'm sorry, we're on vacation, we cannot do that, sorry. No, we are on vacation. Completely different wars.
Yeah.
We're fighting for the people, protecting people, people that want us to come and help them. No one in Iran was asking Americans to come. And those who asked them to, they haven't received help. If there were any, I don't know. Maybe there were a few, but definitely not majority. By the way, in the West, have they ever mentioned about people's vote in Donbass, in Crimea, that people decided their fate? Almost unanimously, 80%+ voted for their independence and then for the reunification with Russia. That's why when Angela Merkel was stating that we could not accept Crimea, completely wrong. Crimea is much closer to the reunification of German people than of Anschluss or anything else. It's a completely different story.
Let me offer my way of looking at it.
Sure.
You started off with mentioning the word propaganda. What do I mean by propaganda? I mean, it's just an observation. In every war, the warring parties, inevitably, they are in propaganda. They're, of course, in a fighting mode. I mean, this is the situation of the fighters. And I'm a Swiss. I'm a neutral guy. You know, I'm standing outside of this. And I even criticize my own country in Switzerland as far as a certain interpretation of neutrality is concerned. But we Swiss, we are not in the position to judge any of the warring parties and say, you know, you're like totally overdoing it and to lecturing Zelensky or to lecturing your president. I try to totally avoid the question, who is the bad guy and who is the good guy? I mean, you can fight for that. I try to look at the interest of countries. And what you are describing with Brzezinski and the origins of the Ukraine war in the consequence of the collapse of the Soviet Union, I totally agree with that. And the United States were in that situation the winners of the Cold War. And, you know, the winners, it's like after the First World War, it went to their heads. They started to behave in a way which was felt in Russia and was a violation of their national security interests and also a humiliation. But in the West, being so full of themselves, you know, the end of history, and now we made it, everybody's turning into a little American, into a little European, they started to be insensitive. They didn't even think about that anyone could feel offended. What's the problem of Russia? Why do they have a problem with NATO expansion? I mean, we are their friends. We're just, you know, that's not against them. And this is exactly the danger you are also trapped in when you start to see the other side only through your own eyes. And this is the mistake the West did, and this is the mistake you do in your programs, that you look very convincingly from a Russian perspective on these Western idiots and evil guys. And so I have a different perspective. I say...
Yeah, but just a little remark. Never people... Only political.
No. I know you're not.
That's important. With all respect to the people.
You're criticizing the leaders. Yeah. You're not criticizing the people. That's absolutely true. In our conversations, you differentiate. Well, what is the situation? Let me bring just a brief summary. 1945, Soviet Union, United States, and England were sitting at the tables, dividing up the world between them. This new world order lasted till 1990-91, then the collapse of the Soviet Union, and we had like the hegemony or the unilateral dominance of the United States of America. And this is this political strategy, the Brzezinski Doctrine, was of course the result of we won the Cold War, and now we want to make sure that nobody else can somehow challenge the situation. China was lying on the ground. Russia was trying to find its way again, to come up to its feet after the terrible 90s, these terrible years, which were not really seen in the West. I mean, or they have forgotten about it, and they didn't see the achievement of your President Putin in bringing Russia back on track and holding the country together, which in my view, I was there quite several times, was kind of somehow falling apart. And now what happened? Russia and China got very strong. Russia got also much stronger, and the United States got relatively weaker. And so this unilateral dominance is gone, and now we are in the multipolar world, which is emerging. And of course, the Russians said, we've had it. Come on, are you crazy? Should we wait till they put their nuclear weapons on the Red Square? I mean, what are they doing? And of course, you're right. I mean, for the Russian, in the Russian perspective, it was an existential threat if all these former Warsaw Bloc countries are running into the Western alliance. But now there is a black spot in your view, and we discussed it in our first conversation. You have to accept that in the West, especially in countries like the Baltics, but also in Ukraine, also in other countries of the Eastern European sphere, they are still traumatized by the Soviet rule. They have a different perspective than you have on Stalin, of the Gulag and all this stuff. And they were saying, Americans, now the Russians are weak. Please help us. We want to get onto umbrella. I can understand this fully.
But we understand this completely.
Also, let me make this point. But I understand also the Russian position. But now I think the time is right, because no big power at the moment can win the war decisively. The Americans can't win decisively. The Russians can't win decisively. Now's the time to discuss, to bury these bogeymen, to bury these preconceptions, and try to look at the world through the eyes of the other guy.
Roger,
this is why I am in your program,
course,
but I'm talking against an iron wall.
Of course, Roger, but that's why you're so naive. And there's a beauty.
I mean, that's not naive. That's total realism.
No, that's
what I'm
the beauty
you.
Of your naivety, and I'll explain why.
We're not
the one that are willing.
Now you're falling under your discussion level.
First of all, yes, the tragedy of Baltic states. Of course, that's the tragedy of Baltic states. What tragedy of what Baltic
states?
Come
on. How many people did the Soviet Union deport and, you know, put in the Gulag?
We'll,
I mean,
we'll
it's a terrible crime. Russia has never paid for it.
We'll get into it. First of all, it's the same as with Holocaust. That is obviously against Jews, no doubt. But it's not the same as with...
At least on this we can agree.
Of course, with Galadamor. Because as we discussed, that's an awful, it's enormous tragedy. But not just of Ukraine and Ukrainian people. It was true all over former Soviet Union, Kazakhstan, Russia, and it happened. The same with Gulag. It was not only against people of Baltic states. It was true all over Russia.
Of course.
Of course. With Baltic states, when I'm asking this question, what Baltic states? And you asked me not to get deep into history. So that's why, let me just put it as a little. Those who are interested in the history of Baltic states, please do pay attention to when they became independent, how they became independent back in 1917. Then why Russian troops before the Second World War, as we say, liberated them from juntas, who asked Russian troops to come in. Then please check, during Soviet times, what were nationalities of people that ran those countries and how changed the population of those countries, the GDP of those places, and how many representatives of those countries at this time republics were on the very high rank of Soviet power. And what was the income and how much money center spent on those regions? And then we'll continue this discussion. But once again, every time when we're discussing extremely important point on Baltic states, when we are discussing extremely important point of former Eastern European countries, ask yourself one easy question. Those countries, they had their own armies. When we're talking Eastern European countries, they had their own secret service. They were run by representatives of their own people. They even had their own elections. And that's why even now in Germany, you can still see GDR every time they vote. So maybe it's not that black and white. Maybe it's not that easy. But, how many people in the West speak Russian language? Of those who not emigrated from former Soviet Union? And how many people in Russia speaks European languages? We know you much better than you know us.
You're absolutely true. And it's interesting, it's even amusing, if you're trying to explain to me that one should not look at everything black and white.
I never did the
impression that you are somehow the master, the Michelangelo of painting this chiaroscuro style. But again,
our time is running out.
May I ask you a question next week?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it somehow...
Discipline! You Swiss people do not know what discipline is!
From my view... Of Russia,
yeah,
and of this amazing cultural huge body and inspiration universe.
Right.
Somehow, in this huge galaxy, there must come up the thought or the question, well, why is it so that not everybody in Eastern Europe loves Russia as much as Vladimir Solovyov? And probably this is just not the evil doing of some Dr. Mabuses in the European Union,
or
some neocon strategists, but because also your country, and it's absolutely not black and white.
There were
crimes, and this is why I say, this is my point, why I'm referring to history.
Yeah.
Because you can use history to create tension, to use it as oil to put it in the fire, but you can use it also to create understanding and see, okay,
of course, but
nobody's black and white.
Of course, there were crimes.
So let's sit together at the table. Let's overcome this discussion.
I agree, but of course,
we have to find peace, and you have to find. And Russia, this is the great moment in our last program.
That's what our president told us. We're always open for negotiation.
I want to convince you that he's right on that, because you say you're criticizing him all the time.
Well,
and I say in our last program, Vladimir, in our last program, you said Russia is Europe. And I say, this is great. This is a silver lining. That means Russia is Europe. Possibility for Europe. You cannot just throw bombs on Europe.
Russia is Europe. You are not. Well, Swiss is, but Russia is Europe. European Union is not. They just don't somehow took the name. But cultural-wise, religion-wise, but we're getting back to the circle. We'll discuss it.
Yeah.
But we don't want to conquer Europe. That's not us who are stating that Russia has to be defeated, this strategic defeat of Russia. That's what European political leaders are saying. Yeah. We never, ever mentioned strategic defeat of Europe.
Give me political leaders to talk to.
Give them to me.
Trump.
You've been to Baltic States.
Trump.
You spoke with a lot of them.
Talk to Trump.
I tried.
And Trump.
Any moment I'm ready to make an interview with Donald Trump.
Absolutely. And Trump, I mentioned this the last time.
He said
before the Super Bowl final 2017 that he had greatest respect for the Russian president, which somehow caused some uproar
like
in conservative
Trump.
Circles.
Definitely,
so
he's
Trump,
extremely interesting for the interview. I like Trump.
Sorry?
I do like Trump, but I do not overestimate him. He's not pro-Russian.
No.
He's pro-American. And that's enough.
That's true.
That's
enough.
Roger, next week.
But he's not religious. Okay.
we'll continue next week. Discipline, yeah. We Russians, we have to teach you Swiss discipline.
But I see you're getting slowly on my point of view. This is a great success of conviction for Switzerland.
Of course, dream
West
on, Switzerland.
West against East 1.0. I'm leading.
Well, let me put this way.
The great Solovyov is hanging
you
in
see,
the ropes.
West against East. So once again, you are dividing Europe. So now we're not European. So now for Europe, we are West. Yes, yes. Now again, we are enemies. So now you are dividing us.
I'm
back.
The bridge builder. I'm the
we
bridge builder.
We are barbarians that will come to conquer your cities.
And
take your women.
I risk my existence. I risk my whole existence and my family and my company only by talking to you, devil incarnated,
yeah,
in front of the camera.
That's very true. But we can always hunt you somewhere deep in Siberia. Thank you,
Roger.
We can drink
a fine Burgundy wine when we're both in the camps in Siberia.
Yeah, but for this purpose, we have to conquer Burgundy. next week, we'll continue.